Hello again. So this is Pascal Chapuis from the Art of VFX podcast, and I'm here at FMX with Aaron Gilman from Weta Digital, animation supervisor.
Woohoo!
Hello, Aaron.
Hi.
Hey. So, Aaron, background leading you down to New Zealand. Tell us for everybody where you come from.
My journey towards animation actually had nothing to do with animation. I got my university degree in philosophy, in fact, because I was incredibly confused about what I was going to do with my life, and philosophy seemed interesting, so I went into that knowing that I probably wasn't going to do anything with it after I graduated, and I didn't. After I finished, I started working as a PA on film sets, like The X-Files and... you know, that sort of thing, just like short movies, you know, shorts and stuff like that. Mm. And realized that I hated working on film sets, and basically was a video store employee for years, sold women's shoes, and at the age of 26 years old was sitting on the bus, my wife also working in retail, about $13 in our bank account, totally depressed, not knowing what I was going to do with my life. And saw an advertisement on the bus with a dinosaur and the Vancouver Film School advertising. And it started to dawn on me that all of my past interests in photography, acting, I spent many years wanting to be an actor, and my love of film. I had a long-standing passion for cinema. And I started realizing that, you know, the Commodore 64 that my mother bought me when I was 12 years old and the fact that I'd become really good at computers and acting and photography, I was like, wait a minute, that's what people actually do for a living. So I went to the bank and took out a $20,000 loan, and I put myself back into school at the Vancouver Film School. And in about 3 months, I knew that I was in love with animation. And after the program was over, I got my first job at Meteor Studios in Montreal, mm-hmm. which was basically a startup company, part owned by the Discovery Channel. And they were built essentially to compete with Framestore and the BBC for the Walking with Dinosaurs mm-hmm. Project that they had done. And so my first job in the industry was essentially doing dinosaur animation for the Discovery Channel. And I did that for about 2.5 years and decided that I needed to make my move into film. And so I sent my demo reel all over the world, and I got hired by Tippett Studio in San Francisco. And so I worked on my first feature film, which was The Matrix Revolutions, the third Matrix film. And I was in love. I was animating sentinels and, you know, just destroying stuff in animation scenes and just having an absolute blast. And stayed at Tippett for three projects. So I did The Matrix, and I did Hellboy, and got to work with Guillermo del Toro, which was incredible, and Constantine. So, and then we decided to leave San Francisco largely for personal reasons. We had our first child and realized we were very alone as new parents in America without our family in Canada. And so we left, and I went back to Montreal, where there was no film work at the time. So I took a job as the animation director at Ubisoft in computer games, which was my first experience with computer games. And I stayed there for 2.5 years, and I was the animation director on Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Vegas for the Xbox 360. Decided that I did not enjoy working in games. It was a very, very difficult experience for me, having come from film, where, you know, you're really working towards the performance and what the performance is going to be in the final product. And in computer games, it was a very different experience. You're ultimately not working towards the performance. You're working towards the gameplay. How fun is the game to play? And finding a balance between gameplay and the quality of animation was difficult for me. That's not to say that it can't be done. There's incredible animation being done in games. It was just not for me. And so I decided to leave Ubisoft, and I went back to Meteor Studios, who was starting a film called Journey to the Center of the Earth 3D. And I went there as the animation supervisor, and in fact worked with Chris Townsend, who was the visual effects supervisor for his first film. And of course I would later work with him on Iron Man 3. And Meteor went bankrupt at the end of Journey, so I was out of film work. So not knowing what to do, I took a job with Electronic Arts in Montreal as the animation director there for an original product concept that they wanted to develop. And at a certain point, they canceled that product, and I was so upset with the game industry and what it was doing to me that I basically called up a couple of very close friends of mine that I had worked with at Tippett that were living in New Zealand and had been there since Kong. And they told me to come down. So I sold my house, sold everything I owned, moved my wife and my son down to New Zealand, and started working on Avatar. I did a year and a half on Avatar. And it was very important for me to make sure that I was getting creature work on Avatar. I went down there not wanting to sort of be put to the sidelines. I wanted to get deep inside of the creature work process with the animation team. And so, you know, I would stay late at night on my own, and I would animate my own animations of Banshees. That was the thing, is I would just create my own work for Banshees, and then I would show it to the animation supervisors, Andy Jones and Dave Clayton, and obviously they realized I really want to do Banshees. So I started doing a lot of creature work on the film, and then after Avatar was done, I went on to Tintin as a lead animator. And I was on Tintin for about 2 years. And towards the end of that project, they asked me to supervise a sequence on the film, which was the finale, the big crane battle between Sakurin and Haddock. And so that was my first opportunity to supervise in the studio. Super excited. Knew the project well because I had been a lead on it already for almost 2 years. And so I did that. And then Avengers came along. And I was asked to supervise the animation for that, and I joined Guy Williams, and we formed an incredible, you know, partnership on that project, and had a blast animating on that and supervising the team on that. And then took a break from supervising for a bit, went on to Hobbit, animated on that, did a lot of wargs and eagles and that sort of thing, and then Iron Man 3, and now I'm here.
Well, thank you for... Wow.
That was long.
That's great.
That
for
was
the,
exhausting.
That's great for the youngsters also to hear a path like this, a full.
Yeah.
I mean, that goes international now from here to there to low to ups, and everything can happen.
Just one thing to say, though, is going back to the university degree in philosophy, it actually did help me throughout my animation career. You know, problem solving.
Dealing with the people.
Yeah, dealing with people. Most importantly, problem solving. Thinking about problems and how to solve those problems is a day-to-day aspect of working in a visual effects pipeline. And so all of that brain power that I spent in university was actually helpful. So, you know, anybody doing a visual effects and wanting to take a philosophy class, it's not a bad idea.
Exactly. We might use it later on.
Exactly.
Wow. So this brings us to today, and Iron Man 3 is coming out.
Yep.
And you're the animation supervisor on this. Any challenges of this specific production in relation to animation when you first... Okay, you received that script, you read these few lines, and you were supposed to be the supervisor. You, what happened? I mean, you were a specific sequence or the entire movie? Or
yeah, no. So animation at Weta did 422 shots in about 3.5 months on the film. We actually started going into Christmas last year and finished by the end of March. And at the very beginning of the process, there was one... I mean, there were a couple of challenges, but there was one fundamental challenge that we knew was going to be a major issue for us that we had to, you know, use all of our brain power to figure out how are we going to do this, and that was the suit transformation. So if you think about the work that ILM did on Avengers and Iron Man 2, where he gets inside of a suit, and the architecture and the mechanical design that's involved in how this suit transforms, how the internal armor has a very specific and direct relationship with the external armor, and how they drive each other in order to form this architectural design. We not only had to do tons of that in the third act battle, which was all of our work. We essentially did the final battle.
You mean when the armor connects with the actor.
Exactly. So you've got that final battle where Tony is constantly jumping in and out of suits, right? That's the fun. And it was going to be not only a creative challenge for us, but it was going to be a big technical challenge for us. That wasn't something that we explored as much as a concept on our work on Avengers. And this was a film where, in as little as 3.5 months, we needed to have tons of shots where he was doing, you know, interacting with the suits in this way. So that was going to be a really big technical challenge for us.
Wow. And how did you react to this? So you have 3.5 months to do this. Did you approach new techniques or new ways, or you anything you can tell us?
Yeah, for sure. Essentially, in order for us to make sure that we delivered that show on time, we needed to look at any bottlenecks in the process that were going to affect our ability to deliver shots. That's largely what it came down to, is we needed to deliver the shots on time. And so if we had done the suit transformations in a traditional way, it would have been very complicated for us. So it's okay if I get into some technical stuff. So we work with a referencing system, right? Maya has a built-in referencing system. Essentially what that means is that the puppet, which is the character that the animator is animating, is within their scene, that puppet is pointing to a centralized file that exists elsewhere on the network. And it's in that centralized file that we do all of our updates to the puppet. We need to update something about the functionality or whatever it may be. It's done in that centralized file. And what that means is that the puppet in the animator's scene is essentially locked to them. They can't modify it. They can't make custom changes to the geometry or the functionality of the joint structure or the hierarchy and have that work in any official capacity whatsoever. But these were shots where we needed to cut this stuff up. We needed to have limbs separating from the puppets. We needed to take the geometry in any way that we liked and be able to cut it and transform it in creative and artistic ways. So if we had approached this in a traditional way using our referencing system, we actually wouldn't have started our design work with the puppet because it's essentially locked. We would have started with the hero model. So we would have just taken the hero high-res model at the global origin in a T stance, and the animator would have taken all of their knowledge of modeling tools, which isn't what we normally do, and they would have started manually cutting up those pieces however they saw fit, taking locators and sticking them into the different panels and then moving them in artistic ways and trying to get an internal approval through me and through Guy. But the problem with doing it this way is it's not moving. It's a hero model. There's no joint structure. It's just sitting at the global origin static. So after doing all of this work, we still wouldn't be able to show it to Marvel because it's not within the context of a shot. So they can't judge the performance. So if we had gone this route, we would have done all those cuts, handed it off to modeling after we had approved the look of it internally. Modeling would have officialized all the cuts on the official geometry. Then they would have handed it off to our creatures department, who would have then applied it to our official referenced puppet. Then it goes back to animation, and now we can finally start blocking. We lose so much time in this process before we can ever get anything in front of Marvel. And the worst part of it is that if Marvel doesn't like the cuts, if they don't like the panel work, we go back to the beginning and we start all over again. So it was very easy for us to identify that this was never going to work in order for us to do these types of shots. So we invented basically something else. So we created what we call the guide rig system. Okay, the guide rig system is essentially a non-reference puppet. So that was the first thing, which is have the animators working on a puppet that doesn't fall within this referencing structure. Then with the help of one of our creature gurus, a guy named Abs Jeromey, brilliant, genius guy, we basically created a whole bunch of proprietary tools that we stuck inside of a UI, which we call the Guide Rig UI. And we gave the animator enormous amounts of creative control for driving the transformation on top of their existing blocking of their animation within the context of their shot. So right off the bat, there's no interdepartmental dependencies. The animator can take the Guide Rig system, using all of Abs's tools, they can cut it, they can mirror the cuts. We gave them all of these incredible parenting tools. We gave them these tools that allowed them to identify very quickly of these hundreds of pieces of geometry, who are the children, who are the parents, what's driving what. You could essentially work on one side of the body with all of your cuts and all of your animation and then mirror it to the other side, so you're saving time by just focusing on one side. They had the ability to create custom controls on the fly where they could position those pivots wherever they want depending on how they wanted it to animate. We created a really cool internal armor system so that in order to keep the scenes light, the animator is just working with basically, you know, low-res polyplane representations of the internal armor. If we had worked with the high-res Geo, the scenes would have been way too sluggish, impossible to work with. But the cool thing is that at any point, the animator could swap in that Geo using the tool so that they could judge depth differences between the polyplanes and the thicker Hero Geo. We also built a whole series of constraint tools. So we built basically these external drivers on top of Maya's constraint system. So anybody who's worked with Maya's constraint systems knows that it's a very manual process. You build the constraint, but then if you need to change the posing of either the object being driven or the object driving, you essentially have to break the constraint, redo the posing, and then build the constraint again on top. It's very manual. It takes time. Using ABS's external driver, which essentially handles all of the under-the-hood stuff with Maya's constraints, you could repose any object after you had built the constraint and play back the animation and it would be seamless. You could also change the timing of the constraints. So that's another thing. You change the timing of a constraint in Maya and you get pops. We could change the timing of the constraint and play back the animation and it would be seamless. So essentially, once we had worked this process out, we could do all of our animation up front, not have to rely on other departments like models and creatures to deliver work to us, get the stuff in front of Marvel at the front end of the process. So that way we've got feedback, we know everything that we need to know from them. And then once they approve it, then we hand it off to our modeling department, who takes all of the cuts we've done, officializes them, gives it to creatures. Creatures plugs it into our official high-res reference puppet, then gives it back to animation, and with a tool that we built from ABS in the guide rig, it would auto-copy all of the control animation from the guide rig onto the high-res puppet. So the animator isn't sitting there copy-pasting from one control on the old guide rig to the new puppet. And then we're just polishing animation. And that's it. We're done.
Wow. Very nice, huh? Very technical. So on this one, you were not like animating mainly like him flying around, but a lot of parts of him.
A lot of parts.
So it's a different type of
animation. Absolutely. Yeah, and it was essential that we make sure our transformations fell into the technological universe of Stark Industries. You know, we needed to make sure that we weren't transforming the character in a magical way. It couldn't be magic. The other thing it couldn't be is it couldn't be simplistic, like barn doors, you know? It couldn't just be that. So obviously the main thing that we looked at was the work that ILM had done on Avengers. And they were great sources of reference for us because they showed a real mechanical design. There was a relationship between that Under Armour and that outer armor that was very specific. Nothing ever happened for no reason. And that was a huge source of inspiration for us, but also more importantly, to make sure that, you know, we're not reinventing the wheel, that we are functioning within the Marvel universe. And also, obviously, we looked at what other studios were doing with transformations on Iron Man 3, you know, like Trickster and Scanline. You know, they did that type of work as well. So we need to look at that and just make sure we were all creatively on the same page.
Yeah, nice. And Aaron, any specific then shot that you're proud of?
Well, I'm proud of the one shot I animated. No, of course.
I
gave myself one shot. That was my Christmas holiday, the shot where all of the suits arrived for the first time.
Okay.
You remember the shot. Yeah. I'm proud of all of the work. Obviously, when you're working in this process, you're very critical of what you're doing, not only personally, but as a team, and you always want to make it better. But anybody who's an artist and who works on a work of art, they're always going to be very, you know, self-critical of it. But when I look at the work that we did on Iron Man 3, I'm incredibly proud of it, not only for the quality of the work, but the fact that we did it in the time that we had. The fact that we assessed what the problems were before they happened so that we could, you know, get through them easier.
Yeah, well, yeah, because in 3.5 months, it's kind of mind-boggling. Any word when we're about to end, but any word on collaboration either with your own teams of artists and animators or special relationship with supervisors or how it worked with the directors? collaboration is, then we go back to your philosophy classes. But how was the collaboration generally on this one? I
mean, well, there's collaboration at all levels. So I have a very strong collaboration with the lead animators that are on the project. So we had Mark Smith, and we had Morgan Loomis, and we had Abs, the guy from Creatures that I told you about. And we also had Jance, and we had Paul Story, who also helped supervise some of the work as well. And the collaboration within the animation team is just an incredible sort of process. We're all, there's no competition. We're all very much there to support each other. And there's also collaboration between me and Guy, right? That's a huge part of this process. Which is Guy is there.
The visual effects supervisor.
The visual effects supervisor is, you know, I have a relationship with him from Avengers, and that's a collaborative element that's been allowed to grow. That's something that I've really enjoyed. He and I challenge each other, which I think makes the work better.
So you're like, Guy, I tried this with my guys, and what do you think about this?
Yeah, and sometimes he'll love it, and sometimes he'll be like, I don't know. And then I'll go and do something else, and I'll try something else. And then there's collaboration with Marvel. You know, one of the things that we had to do, this was another major challenge for us, which was, you know, there's this massive aerial battle happening in the background of hundreds of shots in this third act finale. And when we had initially started the work and started receiving a lot of the materials from Marvel of the previs, we realized that not a lot had been done on what the look and feel of this huge aerial battle was. What was the tempo of it? How fast do the suits fly? How many suits are there in the background of each shot? What are they doing? What are they doing with the mercenaries? What are those interactive moments? That hadn't really been designed.
Not a lot of answers, yeah.
No. So when it came to us, it was like, okay, well, animation is going to design this from scratch. We're essentially going to function kind of like second unit directors, you know. We're going to have a collaborative relationship with Marvel to make sure that this is done right. And that was a huge creative process for us because, believe it or not, designing hero performances is a very different job than designing background performances. Very different. When you take an animator that's an expert in designing hero performances and you give them background animation, what do you think that they want to do with it? They want to draw
it to the front.
Yeah, and they want to draw your eye to it, right? They want to make it as cool as possible. And sometimes that's a problem because the background animation is there to enforce the action, you know, to support it, but it's not there to draw your eye to it. So there was a whole series of artistic learning and growth that we had to go through in order to understand how to essentially create what we started to call choreographed chaos, which is they're CG elements, so they're controlled by us, but at the same time, visually, they can't look like they're controlled. They look like they're staged or they're perfectly framed. Every little space of negative space in the background is being filled with suits. It starts to look like a staged concept, and that was something that we had to learn to get away from so that it felt really organic and almost realistic, almost like combat photography.
Yeah. Wow, very nice. We could talk all night, Aaron.
We could. I could keep going.
I think we're going to leave it to that. Thank you very much for giving all these insights.
My pleasure.
To Art of VFX, and good luck for the next endeavor.
Thank you very much.
I'm sure it's going to be great. Yeah. Thank you, Aaron. Cheers. And that was Art of VFX and Pascal talking to Aaron Gilman from Weta Digital.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
All right, cheers.